am Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God in AA since the 10th of December, 1967. For that, I'm very grateful. This has been a very nice weekend. I have enjoyed. One of the things I like best about going around talking is being with the other people who talk and meeting the most active members of AA all over the country. We just encourage each other. I really think there's a tendency. Old men tend to be like herd bulls. We tend to go away, crawl into our cave, quiet, more independent. But we're at our best when we're with you, even though our tendency may be to separate from time to time. And that's been the story of my life. I'm at my best when I'm with you. I know more about who I am when I'm with you than any other room in the world. More than the room where I'm a husband, more than the room where I'm a father, more than in the room where I'm a worker. This room is where I found out who I am. This isn't the only room that knows, but it's where I found out. And it's this is my culture, you are my people. This is the place to have that conversation. You started that conversation. You didn't start that conversation. You enriched and deepened and made it that conversation. I knew that conversation before I came to you, but I didn't know it in a way that made a difference. You had it with me in a way that made a difference to my life. So that's good. Dick Anderson talked about Keith Lewis, about wanting God to take him rather than Keith. We had a vote, a regional vote, and we all agreed that God should take you. Rather than Keith. It was. It was close, but crap. Our 12 steps says having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I am going to talk mostly about having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I have been active in service in AA at most levels throughout my entire life. My sponsor was an extraordinarily active guy who did a lot of 12-step work, and I had the privilege of doing lots of 12-step work. Detoxes, prisons, old-fashioned calls, sponsorship. I went up the line and did general service and was a delegate. If you have the spiritual awakening that we are going to talk about, you will do service. You cannot not do service. If you do service without having some of the changes, your service won't be as effective. But service is always, you start where you are. You know, I think most of the service that I got called to in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got called through my ego. I don't think you stay because of your ego, but I think you get attracted. I'd like to do that. Gee, wouldn't that be center of attention? My wife hates it. My wife does not like people looking at her, so she doesn't want to be here. You know, the first time I saw someone here, I don't think I said it consciously, but I, you know, I was called to that. I think that's why one of the reasons I like to hear so many people give AA talks. Someday, I guess I was going to give AA talks. Didn't know that. The spiritual walk, eventually, the way you wake up, is you start to see yourself in other people. You start to see God in other people. The people that you work with are your mirror. They are your mirror. The privilege that it is you, that's where you see yourself. That's where you get the message of what work you're supposed to do. I mean, the first time you're trying to stay a couple of pages ahead of someone in the big book, trying to help them through the step process, you know, I mean, that's what, you know, you meet yourself, you learn yourself, you tell in the sharing of someone else, you're telling yourself exactly what you need to know. I did a retreat last weekend I think it was last weekend, 2 weekends ago. I mean, it was for me. It was absolutely, unquestionably for me. I ended up having the conversation with myself in that weekend I was supposed to have. And so service is absolutely necessary. We try to use words to describe what we're supposed to do. Words don't contain it. So you will, I think sometimes speakers forget what extraordinary members of Alcoholics Anonymous they are. I don't think they're the models. I think they're examples. I don't think many people get to sponsor 35 people. I don't think many people get to talk 30 weekends a year. I don't think many people, they're exceptions and sometimes don't realize they're exceptions in the communication. The purpose of AA is to return you to life, not to have Alcoholics Anonymous be your life. Most of us are going to be parents, we're going to be workers, we're going to be grandparents, we're going to be active in our community. And I don't know who is the better AA, the guy that gives 30 AA talks a year, or the guy that's president of Kiwanis, a good grandfather, and goes to two or three meetings a week and sponsors a couple of guys. I don't know who the better AA is. You know, I don't think I think you get called where you get called, and you go, if you're open and you listen, you mostly end up where you're supposed to end up. I don't think it's a matter of good and bad. I think it's a matter of, I don't think everybody's supposed to do the same thing. Every reading that I said, if you're going to have a church, you're going to have talkers, listeners, leaders, followers. You know, every organization that I know in the world has, 10-15% of the people are doing 80% of the work, and the rest of the people are, there to get the message and improve their lives and go do that. They aren't, and to compare one group with the other is unfair. May not be their job, may not be their duty. What I know is that Alcoholics Anonymous is life-changing. And that if you really are an alcoholic and you don't change, you're going to die because you have a progressive disease that is incurable. It can be arrested. And in order to do that, you really need to change at levels that you never dreamed you were going to change of. Most of us come in here thinking it's about abstinence, and it isn't about abstinence at all. It's about, it's like a sex change operation. It is not an improvement. It is transformational. It is not, it is so, no, but it is. I mean, it is beyond, there's two places in our literature that, they describe spiritual awakening. In the 12 and 12, Bill said that spiritual awakening, there's many definitions, but he said the most important meaning of it is that we are now able to feel, do, and believe that which we could not before with the unaided strength and our resources alone. He has gained a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He's been set on a path which tells him he is really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, that not something to be endured or mastered. In the very real sense, he's been transformed because he's been laid hold of a source of strength which one way or another has hitherto been denied him. He himself is in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, love of which he thought himself quite incapable. He has received it as a free gift. And yet, usually in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. That's a wonderful description. Jung says, here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what we call vital spiritual experiences. These occurrences are phenomenon. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force in the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Most of the really important things in our program are done to us and through us, not by us. And yet, we sit in the audience thinking, I'm going to get a tip. I'm going to write down something. I heard this guy before. If I do a more complete fourth and fifth step, you did a great job with the fourth and fifth step. But I want to talk about the spiritual awakening kind of as it applies to me. I've had the worst two or three years that I've had in 20 years of sobriety, the last 2 or 3 years. Almost all of it has been self-created. It has been painful, and all the pain has been illusionary. I can understand why the ordinary person shouldn't be self-centered, but I am fascinating. I can see why you'd get tired of it after a while. I am so tired of my own story, I could just puke. I am, both because I'm the age I am, I'm just tired of my story. I'm tired of myself. I really am. I thought about myself to a degree that it is just, I'm tired of it. I just, you know, and yet, I do it well as my default position. It's almost like I can't do it. There's in almost all spiritual literature you read, I'm going to read, there's something that a guy wrote in the foreword to the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, but I like what he says. He says, to most of us, suffering is a fact of life. Now, that's the fundamental truth of Buddhism. That is, that life is full of suffering. That's the one of the Four Noble Truths. The fundamental dissatisfaction of human beings is the central concern of our religious and philosophical systems. Now, why would we need that to be the central theme if most men are not living lives of quiet desperation? I mean, we can talk about having a solution, but the fact is that many of us on a day-to-day basis have a pretty high level of angst, have a pretty high level of discomfort. We have a pattern of thinking that's really destructive. Faced with our inability to remain happy, the great teachers have adapted the most practical approaches. I think we've been presented with one of the most practical approaches to regain a sense of being and a spiritual way of life that's been presented in the history of mankind. But I don't want to have a conversation pretending that there people are in this room that are not having texture in their lives. I mean, this is one of the most demanding economic times we've ever been through the last 4 or 5 years. When you add to it old and dumb, it takes on a texture that you just almost can't imagine. It's really a bad combination, old and dumb. If you could alter one of the two principal variables of that, it would be better. We drink to the extent that we drink because we have pain, and it helped escape it, whether it was insecurity, whether it was pain, angst. I don't know what, you know, and we had a solution. First time we took alcohol. Why would you need a solution if you didn't know the problem? When you put alcohol and drugs down, the problem's back. I mean, if it ever went away, if it didn't get exaggerated in the process of alcoholism, physical, mental, spiritual. Bill talks about the problem lies primarily in the mind. And yet most of our conversation, half of our conversations, it talks about how to gain sobriety. The book almost assumes that we're sober, that we've gotten sober. It talks about how to live life in a way that, you know, we don't go back, you know, to drinking. We measure our success by how long we've been sober. And those of us that are looking from the inside of the fort, no, that's not the only measure. You know, why am I having, you know. It goes on. The 12 steps. The first two times I read, once in the 12 and 12, once in the big book, that it talked about first we get well spiritually and then we get well later, it talked about financially, but then physically and mentally. I thought that's backwards. It's not true. I've thought I've heard other people say first you get well physically, then you get well emotionally, then you get well spiritually. That's always made sense to me. It seems like the people who have been sober longer have a better handle on the God deal. They seem to be progressing through. You know, physically, you get well in the first, depending upon your age and how badly you beat yourself up. That seems to happen first. And it's only been in recent years that I've come to find out that Bill meant exactly what he said. No, but I don't. But not everybody. You don't agree with every. I mean, the first time you read the book, or the third time you read the book. I mean, it's like people put things in there when you're not looking, and you don't. that unless something happens to you, first of all, you probably won't even read the book. Unless something happens to you, you're not going to do any of the steps. Unless something has already happened to you, you're not going to go to the meetings. Unless something has already happened to you, you're not going to get a sponsor. Unless something has already happened to you, you're not going to have your road buddies, you know. So something's already happened that you can hear. I mean, it is, I mean, we come in, that example, I was listening to some spiritual tape walking the beach, and I was that example of the pit bull, you know, with the chain around his neck dragging a tire into the meeting. You know, how do you approach that? No one wants, you know, most pit bulls, they say, oh, they're really friendly dogs. you know, and we don't know how to approach it. So something has to happen. Your pilot light has to get lit in order for you just, you know, it's already lit a little bit to get you to the room. But most of us are kind of sent by the room. We're just conforming. Please, family, circumstances, we are sent to the room. Most of us, the gift for most of us is that we talk about surrendering. Most of us were surrendered. Okay? We didn't surrender. We were surrendered. We were presented in a worn-out state. Okay? And we started a process that we did not understand. And that process changed us enough. The process is profound. So we surrendered and we identified. Can you imagine what a change that is? I mean, all of a sudden, from being isolated, not understood, alone, paranoid, afraid, a victim, a blamer, not identifying, we go from that to surrendered, which at some level means open. And the only reason it's open is we got busted open. The ego got reduced enough that we were teachable for some moment. For many of us, that's months. For some of us, it's weeks. For some people, it closes very fast. And we were, all of a sudden, we were teachable. And we started a process that doesn't look like... And the other thing I notice about a weekend like this is old guys have a great freedom in talking about God. I can remember, you know, I want to remember back at how I left rooms because people had the conversations about God. About we had an upstairs and a downstairs in our A group, and if the conversation got too spiritual, I went to the other, you know, if I was in the top, I went to the bottom. If we were in the bottom, I went to the top. I had a wonderful, strong relationship with my church, but when I found booze and masturbation, it altered. And I, you know, and then when I really got into my alcoholism, it really altered. And I never, you know, and I had not worked that out when I entered Alcoholics Anonymous. And my blood pressure used to go up just driving by churches, you know. So I didn't want to have, I did. I mean, I just, that was unresolved for me. And I didn't have the real distinction between religion and spirituality, did not have it. And so God, for me, I can look back on it clearly, was my sponsor, was about six guys out of 20 in the group. Now, I didn't know that then. I just thought, isn't it nice? These men are talking to me. They're sitting me down. They're having a conversation. That was God. I mean, there's just no question. That was my higher power. I absolutely did not know it. I just felt privileged. I liked being with, these are the big guys. Little guys like being with big guys. You always want to go out with your older brother or your older sisters. And you, okay, I wanted to hang out with the big people. And they let me. It didn't get any better than that. So I came early. I left late. My gift is I liked Alcoholics Anonymous from the moment I walked in the front door. My gift. So it's been easy for me to stay, hard for me to do the work. But it was a gift. So then I started through what Bill talks about in the 12 and 12, in the 12th step, I started through the steps. The entry is powerlessness. Nothing can happen until... So we come in here, so last night I said, you know, bring your damp log to the bonfire of AA. Most of us have an internal dialogue that is killing us. It is the internal dialogue that we have to shut off when we're drinking booze. That is why the third drink, when Sandy talks about it, you go, yeah. I mean, it's just, that's what we're being relieved from. We're being relieved from it because our consciousness is being lowered. Okay? Eventually we will be relieved from it because our consciousness will be raised. But alcohol and drugs lowers the consciousness and frees us from that internal dialogue that's going on. For some people, that internal dialogue is so dense, you couldn't enter it. It is so much content and so much speed, you couldn't put a stick in it. Okay? There's no entry point. It's an egg. There is no place to get in it, and if you were able to get in it, it is so dense and so fast, you'd shear the stick off. That's why there has to be an event. People don't change their thinking without some sort of violent event happening in their lives. They've built the machine their entire life. It is their success machine. It doesn't, for many of us, it doesn't work very well. It hasn't been very successful for some of us. Yeah, but for some of us, it works well in business. Doesn't work well in marriage, or it works well in gambling, or I don't know. You know, we have little arenas of our lives where it seems to work well. Overall, it doesn't work well. You wouldn't end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, end of story. So, you know, it's got to be slowed down. There's got to be some event that knocks us on our backside to get open up enough to start a new conversation. You know, when Earl does that internal dialogue conversation about the new guy at the meeting, I mean, that doesn't, as wonderful as that is, kind of a classic in Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't come close to touching the density and intensity of the isolation and self-direction that we bring into these rooms. So what has to happen to us has to be somewhat violent. There has to be a real breakdown for us just to come in and be open enough to be able to hear what's going on. That is the seminal event. Surrender, and then identification. And once that happens, you're a different person. There's an aunt, I really believe for me more than anything else as Alcoholics Anonymous has been a new conversation. You started a new conversation in my life. I mean, it started with the fact that alcoholism was a disease, didn't know that. Started with the fact that what we did in Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't abstinence, didn't know that. Started with the fact that there was a difference between sobriety and abstinence. Did not know that. When I looked at the steps had almost nothing to do with not drinking. I didn't know that. My whole journey in Alcoholics Anonymous has been came from what I didn't know and didn't know I didn't know. Yeah. Everything that has been of significance and I did not know God. And the little bit I knew about God, and I had experience of God. That isn't exactly true, but I not for a long time. The drunken, sloppy, teary things. But I had, as a young person, I had some pretty cool experiences with God. Lost them, and then I would regain those in the thing. But you can imagine a God that a person with my brain could imagine. It would be very limited. First of all, I didn't imagine it much. I didn't think much about God. That wasn't on my agenda. Didn't like the conversation. And the way I've been living my life, asked almost no questions about it. Was not interested in it. So, anyway, we start this journey. We start a new conversation. And in AA, if you don't... So why is it important? You know, I was thinking, what would someone else on the outside look at when they looked at us coming into Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, that's why they think it's a cult. I mean, if we were in AA and you had a sponsee who said, I'm leaving AA, I'm going to go to the Church of Christ. And all of a sudden, he's at the Church of Christ 6 days a week. And he's there, they've got 6:30 meetings, they've got prayer groups in the afternoon, and he's there four weekends in the afternoon, and he's meeting with the deacon. I mean, we would be very worried about this guy. I mean, wouldn't we? I mean, if we were truthful, I mean, it is not, I mean, Bill is way gone. I mean, this is, he's screwed. You know, I mean, it is. Okay, so people looking at us really don't understand that. I mean, they think we're shaving our heads selling books at the airport. They do not get, okay. But we need, this is, my sponsor said, look, it isn't a bowling league. You need to get involved with the people. You need to be in enough meetings that you start to change the conversation you're having. If you're not in it enough, you're going to bring your conversation everywhere. There's going to be a conversation in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that is new and healing. I say it's kind of like when you walk in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a little bit like you check your mind at the door, not totally, but a little bit, and you join the collective consciousness in the room. If people in this room have meditated, we know how messy our meditations are regularly. If you've ever meditated in a group, you might notice that meditating in a group is easier than meditating alone. There's something going on collectively that is greater than the individual. I believe there is something collectively and wholly going on in an AA meeting that is greater than the individuals that are in the room. And we get to experience that and then bring droplets of it out into the rest of our life. So we start this conversation and we just feed it. I've had a very funny reaction. I mean, the talks individually have been as good as any place I've ever been. And I found myself saying, look, jerk, you're 44 years old. Why are you having such a difficult time? Why should you have a difficult time? Is there anything you don't know? No. I could give a 15-minute talk on almost every problem I've had for the last 2 years. I just haven't done it very well. Okay? Now, I've done it okay. I've done it to the best of my ability. But it hasn't been easy. My difficulties are no damn different than your difficulty. Even though I got 40 years, when I'm upset, when I'm in angst, when I'm depressed, my upsetness, my angst, my depression is no damn different than yours if you got 6 months. The fact that I got 44 years doesn't make it any more pleasant or less real. It's just that most of the time I know it's not real. Most of the time I know that I went into the library of my mind and checked out the book that I've almost worn the letters off the binding, pulling off. I grew up. Sandy speaks to me more than any other person today in Alcoholics Anonymous. His word pictures. And why does he use word pictures? Because you can't use words to describe what he's pointing to. You can point to it, but you can't surround it. And you can't grab it with words. It's beyond words. It's of God. Most of what the essence of what... So I'm finding myself listening to this conversation we're having this weekend, and I'm listening to it like I've turned on television in... I'm listening to a series of evangelists. I'm listening to these preachers get up. There are similarities that are just striking. We've got, the pregnant nun on the motorcycle, the loser businessman. We've got, the biker. We've got, we bring the variety of the different people into the menagerie that we, stand up and, give the talk in the sort of thing. And I found myself saying, I can't do what they're talking about. I'm 44 years sober, by the way. I sponsor a whole bunch of people. I go to 4 meetings or 5 meetings a week. I'm in the game, got my helmet. I'm doing the best I know how to do. I'm dancing as fast as I know how to dance. And I can't do what the conversation we had this weekend. I can't do the 4-step as well as Sheldon does it. I can't give as many talks as Bob gives. I don't think I sponsor quite as well as Bill. I can't do it. I've been trying it all my life. I don't need one more thing I can't do. I don't. I'm serious about this. This is not a joke. Okay. I grew up in a life that I had a lot of things I couldn't do. And I was well equipped. I was born on third base. I have a college education my parents gave me. No college debt. If you couldn't do something with your life from where I started from, give me a break. And I don't need one more thing I can't do. And the totality of the discussion that we've had this weekend, I can't do. It's too much. It's more than I can do. When I'm grounded, I can say that's okay. I don't have to... we're describing to the very best of our ability. We're trying to give you the very best information we can. But no one does this perfectly. I mean, this is like six golf pros standing up here telling us about everything from putting to their short game, and I'm an 18 handicap. Now, I'm interested in that conversation. I'm doing the same things they're doing. I just don't do the individual. Collectively, I don't do everything as well as individually they're describing. And I need to know that's okay. I need to know that that's life. Does anybody think perfection, other than in the spiritual sense that Sandy talked about it, is a serious problem for the people in this room? Okay. Or a serious goal for the people in this room? It is an objective. It is like moving towards God. It is that powerful conversation that Sandy had yesterday. So, but I want you to know the last two or three years, pretty tough, illusionary, made up. All the suffering I had was in my head. Same wife, same house, same car, same kids, same clothes, same food. Nothing's different other than the story in my head. And I am suffering. I mean, it is not much fun. And I know it's, I know it's bullshit. I just know it, but it's my bullshit. It is rich and deep and colorful and artistic, and it is. And I can't have the conversation because I feel so lame. I mean, I'm 44 years sober, and I'm struggling like guys that I think should struggle in their first couple of years of sobriety. Okay. It is the human condition. So we've done a lot of talk about Dick, in a very nice way, talked about his phone. We got... oh, cripes. It's... there is so little to say, and there is so much to say. I mean, it is beyond... do you have any idea how wonderful you are? There was a woman who was bringing her... child up the steps. I think she said it was 6 months old. There are very few places in life where we still allow ourselves a sense of awe. And one of those places is looking at infants. Okay? And you look at an infant, and it's like looking at God. I mean, it is looking at God, I think. There's a clarity in a... Okay? Are you any different than that? What happened? On the way to being the 70-year-old person sitting in the front row. What happened? Is there any difference? Do you think God looks at you differently? Are you any less interesting? Are you any less wonderful? Are you any less in any way? I mean, that infant, we grant our heart to, and it's done nothing. Nothing. There's no condition. There's no expectation that we have to wait almost 2 years for the expectation. I mean, now they start measuring the IQs, you know, in the embryo. But, I mean, it is... But you know, we think we're in this room, sitting in the room. The world's revolving 1,000 miles an hour. And we don't notice it because we've got atmosphere. Okay, we are revolving around the sun 165,000 miles an hour. We are revolving around the area of the Milky Way that we are in our constellation at 500,000 miles an hour. And the universe is expanding 56,000 miles an hour. And we think we're sitting still in this room. You know how we got here? 14 billion years ago. A billion's a pretty big number. Okay. A million is a million pieces of the paper. Is 30 feet tall. A billion pieces of paper is as tall as the Empire State Building. 14.5 billion years ago, the Big Bang came, and when the Big Bang came, everything that's been created got created. And do you know what the most prolific element in the universe is? Hydrogen. Do you know how much it is? 97% of all the elements in the universe. Do you know what's next? Helium. Do you know how much helium is? Almost 3%. I mean, how's that possible that hydrogen's 97%, helium's almost 3%? The rest of it is rounding errors. That's how rare the things that we're made of are. So, you know how elements got made that are heavier? In stars. So 4.5 billion years ago, in our little corner of the universe, we had a supernova explosion, which is a star, it has to be a star about 15 times the size of our sun, dies. It dies because it was cooking heavier elements. Once a star starts to make iron, it dies. It dies, and in that explosion, there's enough heat and energy to start to create the heavier elements. In that explosion, it blew out all the material that's in our solar system. 99.5% of all that material in our solar system went to make the sun. The other half of 1% went to make all the planets. And so over 4.5 billion years ago, the Earth was a cloud going around the material and coalesced into the Earth. Okay? And somewhere along the line, life started. And who dominated the Earth? Reptiles. But 25 million years ago, a meteor hit the Yucatan and killed all the dinosaurs. And had that not happened, reptiles would have dominated. After that explosion, mammals dominated. And our little stream, we got to, you know, we were in that stream. Okay? Now, for you to be sitting here, there had to be the successful mating of like 100 generations of your family for you to be sitting here. But most particularly for you to be sitting here, your mother and father, they had to have exactly those two people for you to be sitting here. You know, and we complain vociferously about the nature of those two people, most of us in our life. Okay. But if God wanted Billy, okay, he had to have your mom and dad. And not only did he have to have their mom and dad, he had to have the exact instant that they made it to have Bill, or he would have been his brother or sister. It had to be that instant and that sperm in that moment in that connection for Billy to be here. So, thousands of years of successful breeding of his line. And then the only two people that could have brought him into existence at the exact instant that you brought in. There are 6 quadrillion cells in your body. That's a very big number. Billion, million, billion, trillion, quadrillion. Okay? When we have this conversation about our lives, almost all the only thing we pay attention to is conscious thinking. 99.5% of what's going on in our world and body is unconscious, automatic. Your digestive system, your neural system, everything that's going on, your brain, your thinking. I mean, we have an awareness. You know, it's like someone standing on the deck of the Titanic thinking they're doing everything that's going on the Titanic. I mean, it's just, we have absolutely such a small appreciation for the wonder that we are. And then we have this thing called consciousness. We are the only people, only entity that is conscious of themselves and has the sophistication to have the consciousness of God. The only. I mean, there are no... We are so far up in the food chain, you just can't imagine how far up in the food chain you are. That is the highest pinnacle of evolution and a level of spirituality and creation that, you know, we certainly don't know if it's been duplicated in any place in the universe, but to our knowledge, it has not. And there is no higher place to go. I believe when Sandy was, so we are at a level of specialness that we just couldn't get. You need some sort of quiet place. You need some sort of perspective just to understand how profoundly unique and wonderful and what a wonderful creation you are. And that the process of having a spiritual awakening and the process of finding God is the process of removal, not addition. Our process in Alcoholics Anonymous, having had a spiritual awakening, and which is, you know, but how do we get awakened? It seems to me we get awakened by removing what has been in our way of having the experience that has always been there. So we try to get ourselves out of the way. It's a surrender experience. We start to say that we're willing to move towards this power that we don't even understand and really haven't heard of. I'm not sure we want to take the trip. And then we start this house cleaning that Sheldon was talking about not very well. Then we start this house cleaning process. And it's a process of removal. And what comes out of the process of removal? Clarity. What comes out of the process? Awakening. Okay? So, you know, the reason I'm trying to focus on the spiritual awakening is if you get awakened, you can't do anything else other than practice the principles in all your affairs. If you get awakened, service is going to be the automatic result of, and the amount of service and the quality of service you do is exactly connected to your awakenedness. Okay. Chamberlain, everybody's doing the best they know according to their light. When they have more light, I remember him saying, talking about the man committing rape. When he said that, I mean, I came out of my seat. You couldn't imagine that being heard in today's world. But 40 years ago, I was sitting in a hotel room with him, and he said, the man on the street right now committing rape is doing the best he knows how to do. Okay. And I mean, you know, I mean, I know that bothered you, but I didn't understand it. Not only did it bother me, I did not get it. When he knows better, he will do better. Think of your own experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. Before you knew you had alcoholism, you couldn't do anything about it. It had you. See it or be it. We couldn't see it, so we were it. What happened to us? We got awakened. A bus hit us. We had a moment of surrender and truth, and we saw it. And in the moment of seeing it, we had a chance not to be it. I mean, not a small moment. Kind of the moment Bill was talking about Friday night. Okay, so you have been forced on a journey that is the most profound journey that human beings can take by a disease, by an issue, by the bus that hit you is giving you your ticket to be in this room, in your seat, to take this ride. It's a ride you didn't request. It's a ride you didn't know you needed to take. Okay? But you just got your ticket punched on the great journey of life. And you get access to a level of experience and living that very few people ever get a chance to get their ticket punched to. We aren't the only people who get tickets. People in churches get tickets. People have spontaneous spiritual awakening in lots of different ways than we do. There's an awful lot of people that get their ticket punched in these rooms that don't turn it in. Okay? And it seems like we get it punched, you know, and then those of us that come in, we have different degrees of awakening, because we involve ourselves in, you know, different ways in the process. But I want to be clear. The great privilege of having a seat in this room is having that ticket. Most of us are on the bus to paradise, the AA van. I mean, it's this huge, luxurious, wonderful bus on the way to paradise. And we have the shades down. And we are arguing about who is the best-dressed person on the bus. Who is the most important person on the bus? Who is the most articulate person? Who's got the best body on the bus? Who's got the most money on the bus? Who's got, you know, and I've got that conversation. We all have our little conversation. You know, I'm deeply shallow, so I like money and stuff. And as near as I can tell, under the surface, most of us. So 10:30. Okay. So most of us. Program of Alcoholics Anonymous has provided us with a practice. It is also a community and fellowship that is so unique. It is so unique because we have a combination of spirituality and common sense I don't think you find in that combination anyplace else in the world. We are really rough, flawed people. Okay, we are about the best detectors of ingenuousness and lying. We have the best BS detector of almost any group in the world. Why would that be? Okay, it would be because we are so full of shit. That's why it would be. Okay. The quality that is when we start having that disingenuous conversation with each other, we won't even listen to it. So if you have the right people that you're having conversations with, you just get nudged and pushed and helped in a genuine direction. With respect to a power greater than ourselves and respect to God, we don't care what you believe. We don't care what you think. We are willing to have a conversation about what your experience with your higher powers. Don't even care if you call it God. We'll have that conversation. Ours may be different. We may not even agree, but as long as it's genuine for you, we'll listen to it all day long. Now, do you know what a blessing that is? I mean, do you know how many conversations about God that are just so riffed with BS, so riffed with dogma, so riffed with rules? And we're doing that in this room. We're doing that with the Big Book. We're doing that with AA. I think if Bill Wilson saw how we're using the Big Book today, he'd have problems with it. I think there's an authority and a dogmatism that is going through and a rigidity that is going through that was not intended. He did not intend it to be that way. I think it is, the book is divinely inspired. I think it is our truth, our access to truth, all those things. I love the book. But I don't love the way the negative application of spiritual truths is wrong. So knowing what's wrong with the other people who aren't doing it right, I live my life in a church like that. That is not powerful information. What's powerful information? One of the things I like about Sandy, when he focuses on something, there's not much negative in the conversation at all. There's only positive in the conversation. Now, I'm not there yet. I still have both sides. I still have the dualistic conversation. I get there sometimes, but I have trouble, you know, and I can join in. I'm as interested in the dualistic conversation, and I just get my mind going on it. But when I listen to Sandy, I don't get that. I just get the focus. He has a little bit of it, but less than almost anybody I know that I listen to. So, God, you've been given the keys to the kingdom. Not only are you the lottery winner, the genetic lottery winners of evolution, the highest creative evolution position in the history of the universe, you are this incredible 6 quadrillion cell machine that is functioning at a level of success. You know, but we're worried about the success of our bank account, or our gallbladder, or our liver, or, you know, I mean, we have it down to, I mean, we have absolutely no idea of the level. I mean, the level of success is just so beyond what we just don't get it. We absolutely don't get it. And the only thing that will change the quality of your, but most of us, as I have been the last 2 years, are suffering. which is why we drank. We have an answer for that. We really have we're a channel. The answer comes through us. And if we practice the program we have been so freely given, we have access to the whole enchilada. We have access to truth. We have access to peace. We have access to joy that we've never, and why do we have access to it? In some significant ways, because we're jerks, because we're problem people. Bill talks about alcoholics are problem people. Why would that be a help? It's a help because most of us without problems would not turn to God. Most of us without significant problems would not look for the meaning in them. At some point in time, you have to get to a point in your life where you stop feeling like a victim when something bad happens, and you have to ask the question, why am I having this problem? What is this problem trying to tell me about my life? What is God trying to communicate with me? Now, that when you start doing that level of inventory, and that, you don't do that in your first months. I mean, my first inventory was like a third-grade art project. Okay. But understand that. We talk about, like, all inventory. Like, you do the steps, you're going to have a spiritual awakening. Yep. But you may have the spiritual awakening of a first grader. Okay? But there are some people who the first time they do a fourth and fifth step have had a spiritual awakening beyond what I have ever experienced yet in my life. So some people have it hugely and quickly. Some people have it educationally over a period of time. It happens both ways. So I'm not trying to diminish the importance and profundity of what happens early in that process. But so the only way we could find the healing and peace, which was what I think we want, the only way that we are going to find God is the spiritual awakening thing. The only way you're like, if I had a magic wand and could remove every problem of every person in this room, how long have I been talking? Good. Okay. I've got 10 more minutes. I don't want 20. I'm lost enough. If I get 20, I'm going to implode. I think that most of so this room is full of some of the most active members of Alcoholics Anonymous from around this region. It is full of people who really care about how they live their lives. You're in this room listening to a conversation because you're a player. And we've got other people who are here having this conversation. You want to join in that conversation. The reason that, so when we come here, and the presenters do a pretty good job. That's because there's catchers, okay? If you're a pitcher and there's no catcher, it doesn't work, okay? The only way they can have the conversations they've had this weekend is because there's catchers, okay? So we're having this conversation. We created this conversation ourselves together. That's why we're enjoying this experience as much as you are enjoying that conversation. The only way that we can change the quality of our lives. The only way that we can access, so at some point in time, once you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, it does become a journey towards the light. It does become a journey towards God. It does become, okay? Chuck Chamberlain said, you know, a few of us have quoted him this weekend, one of the most profound quotes that I have interacted with all my life in a very private way is, what you're looking for, you're looking with. Is one of the quotes he said to me when I was pretty young. I absolutely did not know what that meant. I am not sure yet I know what it means. What it means to me right now, at this moment, is that I'm looking for God with God. It is the God within me looking for God. If God is everything, it's all I am. I mean, you hear these, you know, made in the image and likeness of God. Give me a break. Do I believe that? I think if you keep bringing your damp log to the bonfire of Alcoholics Anonymous, even though your higher power was a man or a woman, was a group, was a set of steps, was an organization, was a fellowship, you just start to see things you can't explain. You start to see a broken woman come in the room, just dragging her body in the room, and you see her 3 months later in someone's home. Her eyes. Okay, when you have that change, you look different. Not just you look different. You are not the same person. There's someone home, and the lights are on in a way that they have not been on before. You look different. You have a different conversation. In a moment. And that's the change of the book. That's what Bill says. You know, first we get well spiritually. It's like someone planted the nuclear seed that was later going to be the oak tree or something. But because the seed had been properly seeded, that had already happened. The rest of it was the kind of automatic conclusion of someone whose heart's in the right place. Okay? And we're all going to do it differently because we're different people. We're going to do mostly the same things differently in a general sort of way. There is no formula. It is not mechanical. It was mechanical. Every time you'd have a problem, you'd just have to say the third step prayer, click your heels, you'd be back in Kansas. Okay? But most of us know it isn't that simple. It is not controlled. We don't own it. We can't surround it. It is of God. It is a bigger conversation. We have to bring ourselves to that process in a way that is, humble, honest, open, different than not intellectual, not informational, not didactic, not authoritatively, not arrogantly, not rightly. Okay, there really has to be a way of being in that process that would allow us to have the full measure. I mean, I've done a lot of step work, and a lot of times I'm disappointed that I can't get myself to get out of the steps what I have at other times or what I want out of the step that I'm going through the process. It is because I'm not being in the right way in that process. I believe the process to be our process. I just can't always summon myself in a way that I'm as effective in their process as I'd like to be. Okay? So the only way that we're going to get the full measure, find God, have a spiritual awakening, improve our lives, is to increase our consciousness. If I had the magic wand, take away all the problems in the room, on the condition we all come back here in 10 years. If you haven't increased or changed your consciousness, you will have repeated every problem in your life that you have today in this room. You will have recreated them and brought them back in this room. If you're conscious, you're doing the very best you know how to do. Okay? You're going to take your toolkit entirely full of hammers and go back out and live your life with a toolkit entirely full of hammers. Everything looks like a nail. And you're going to come back here and you will have rebuilt and recreated exactly what you brought into this room today. The only thing that makes a difference is a change in your thinking. Is it elevation or change in your consciousness? For us, that path, the practice that brings that about, is the 12 steps. And it is not about the mechanics of the 12 steps. It is about your heart in that process. When you bring your heart to that process, you'll do it to the level of your consciousness. And you'll select someone who's going to help you through it, and you'll do it as imperfectly as the rest of us did it. I mean, I'd be embarrassed to share. I just did what I did as a 24-year-old young person trying to do the best I knew how to do, going through the steps with this wonderful, deep mailman helping me go through the steps. That was what I had. 10 years later, I met a group of people from Texas who jacked my game up some. Never left my mailman. Didn't have to leave my mailman. He was my man. Okay? But I was able to bring back what those people gave me, what the Chamberlains and Bob Whites and different people, gave me, and deepen and enrichen my experience in those steps. And as I continued to go through those steps, it deepened. So, you don't have to. There's no secret handshake. It is not complex, but it is deep. Okay, it is, but it's not complex. It is not complicated. Okay, just bring your heart. You're not missing any information. your head's going to tell you it's about information. It's about data. It's about a tip. It's not. You do not have to worry that you're going to miss something. Well, if you don't have a guide, if you're not really active in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're probably going to miss something. But if you're reasonably active and you have a guide and you bring your heart to the reading of the book, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to make the mistakes we all made. I mean, if we really got everybody to take their underpants off, I mean, it is not as pretty as the communication. Because, and we're not intentionally trying to blow smoke at anybody. We're just telling you the problems we had in our life, and then we're telling you the resolution of the problems. But it sounds like that same thing that the new people, you know, gee, I came to, with the Hank Johnson thing. I came to AA, and it was, my life was so problem, and now today I've got the Cadillac and the, you know, what a lame story. I mean, if I was new and wanted to hear that sort of thing, but it's our journey, okay? And we're trying to share the texture of our lives and the fact that we found resolution and answer in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, if you put us hooked us up to a lie detector, I'll tell you one thing. I don't think you'd get a needle to move if you said, do you believe that the process you're in, with the people you're in, with the book that you're given, is an answer to what's going on in the lives of your alcoholism and yourself and the people that are in this room? Absolutely. No question. And I wish we could communicate that in such a way that we could get you to stay in this room. I wish we could communicate it in such a way that when you're sitting in this chair and you've lost the hope, when you've lost your belief in step two, I wish we could say it and believe it in such a way that just your heart reopens. I don't give a damn if you learn anything this weekend. But if your heart got open and you got into the game a little more fully, that's all you need. Thank you.
Thank you.